Welcome, everybody. We're very glad to have you back here at Cuck My Life. This is the Hopeful Cuck, and I'm here with Hubs to Hot Wife, Poor Boy, and a very, very special guest, the great and interesting Drew Marsden. He has willingly walked into our little den so that we could talk to him about some really interesting things. In particular, one of the things that me, Hubs, and Poor Boy, and Aussie too, who's not available tonight because, you know, he lives on the other side of the world and it makes things more complicated. We wanted to have a conversation about race play, about how that looks and how that feels, but we felt a little awkward being four white guys. So we have invited the great Drew Marsden to come in and share his perspective from an African-American point of view and from the bull side. And I'm really excited to get the conversation going.
When I first got into the lifestyle, I've been in the lifestyle for about 16 plus years.
An aspiring cuck couple wanted to approach you. What would be the best way for them to do
that? What I really get off on is, you know, the submissive aspect of it. Communication is the secret sauce.
Do you think that spade is a derogatory term for African Americans?
Now we play with race, we play with role play, we play with domination, we play with BDSM, we play with all kinds of things in this lifestyle. In the middle of play, the wife used the N-word. An FLR is very appealing to me because I'm very attracted to women that have goddess energy. I would have much better luck showing up to your house as the pizza boy with the hole cut in the box. I see this about the dick pics. When do I send one? I was like, you don't.
He's dropping threesomes, fivesomes, him and 17 women. He's out of control.
Not at all. The best guys I know are cucks.
This is our first guest on Cuck My Life, and we are super excited to have Drew Marsden. Welcome, Drew.
Thanks for having me.
Happy that you were willing to do this with us. Thank you very
much. Well, it's a pleasure, and I'm so glad that you guys are doing this podcast. I've, you know, talked with all three of you before, and it's great to have you all in the same place, at least virtually, and talking and having this conversation. And the great Drew Marsden, I can get used to that. I can hear you guys.
We're not flattery here. We're not above
it. Love it.
I still can't wait to figure out how to introduce you to Tatiana because I think she'd like you quite a bit.
Yes.
So, race play. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us just from your perspective, what that means?
Well, so from my perspective, it's an umbrella term. So I know in this lifestyle with, you know, the Queen of Spades, it typically denotes the most common usages of a white woman, usually a married white woman, who is into black men. No one knows really where that term came from or how it originated. So I am always pretty loath to ascribe a racial or a racist meaning to it, considering that the history there, there really isn't a history for that there. No one knows where that originated in the lifestyle.
So let me ask you, I'm just curious, I don't mean to interrupt, but do you think that spade is a derogatory term for African Americans?
Not personally.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I say that. So a couple of years ago, I kind of started doing a little bit of research on this. And I talked about this in one of my first podcast appearances on the Venus Cuck Cultures podcast. One of the momentum for that being known as a racist term really came from an article that appeared in The Atlantic around the time of the George Floyd's death and the start of the BLM movement. The problem that I have with that article on The Atlantic is it doesn't cite sources. When you read it, the author really is seeming to write anecdotal stories that they've heard. Some of it can be verified. For instance, I forget what was the one that I found to be very true, but it doesn't give any real concrete evidence for the word spade being used as a racial slur. If you look at history, particularly one of the ways that we can find out where spades has been used is by looking at literature and the way spade has been used in a racial context, and particularly American literature, never really been used as a racial term. Even during the Harlem Renaissance in the 1930s, the first time that we have in recorded history of it being used in American literature as a racial term to describe Black people was written by an author from the Harlem Renaissance, a Black man, in which one of the white characters from his book refers to Black people in Harlem as spades. And it's not a derogatory, it's not in a derogatory sense, it's in a sense of, it's used almost in the same context as they would use Negro in those days. And a lot of times, you know, Negro wasn't used in a racist way. It was used to deter, it was used to denote a racial group. So the historical context isn't there. But I also have anecdotal evidence from my family, who's on my mom's side, who's lived in southern Georgia. And, you know, they lived in southern Georgia when it was really bad. My grandfather, who was one of the first, was the first Black elected official in his town, literally campaigned with a 38 on his side, just because he didn't know who he was going to run into that wasn't too keen on a Black man being campaigning for an elected office. And when he did this, this was, you know, this wasn't like 1930, 1940, 1950. This was like 1978, 1980. You know, when he did this. So I actually talked to my aunt and I said, you know, I asked her, I said, you know, you've lived in southern Georgia all your life. I know what it's like down there, even to this day in some areas, particularly in the area she lives. And I go, have you ever been called a spade in a racist way? She goes, no, I've never heard that as like a derogatory term. And, you know, she's been, as she stated, been called everything. And she's never heard that term. And I've never heard that term. The only time I've ever heard the term spade in my personal life used in any kind of racial sense is when I've heard other Black people say they were Black as the Ace of Spades. That's just me personally that I've heard it. I can't speak to like other people's, you know.
You have a room for an anecdote from a poor little white boy?
Sure.
So I would venture to say that I've kind of grew up in generally in the Bible Belt, grew up in a denomination which was basically started because they wanted to support the right of people to own slaves. So I've been around a lot of folks that are not necessarily enlightened on their views about race. And the first time I encountered the term spade as a way to refer to people of, you know, darker skin color was in a Rolling Stone article, you know, about sort of the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and sort of that era of folks. So I sort of, if anecdotal support is anything to lend some credence to your point, I'm going to do that.
So when I came into the lifestyle, there was still, you know, a hot wife, a general hot wife was called a Queen of Hearts. That was a term that was kind of in vogue when I came into the lifestyle. I stopped hearing it for the longest time. And then, so I've been in the lifestyle long enough to remember when people weren't using the term stag vixen. It was, you know, all of it was cuck. You know, it wasn't a differentiation there. So, you know, some of these terms come in and out of vogue, but I personally never experienced Queen of Spades as a racist term. It's racial in the sense that it denotes a non-Black woman's interest in Black men. But yeah, I've never associated it as a racist term.
Well, I think as reasonable people, we can all agree that the women who proclaim themselves to be Queen of Spades love black men. Mm-hmm. They're very, very interested in black men. And I don't think any of them, or at least none of them that I know, look at it as a derogatory term. And I appreciate your perspective on it. When it comes to race play, and when we talk about race play, what I mean is America is a racist country, right? Our friend Aussie, who was not able to be here tonight, he lives in Australia, and he's like, yeah, every once in a while, he's like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? This is very different from what we do. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. That's who we are. Correct. Now, have you ever experienced somebody in the lifestyle who wanted to use derogatory terms for African-Americans, the N-word, for example?
So there have been a couple of instances in which that play has happened. It was never something that so I know in particularly of Bull, who had an incident in which he was playing with a couple, and in the middle of play, the wife used the N-word. There was never a conversation or talking or anything like that. What had happened, though, interestingly enough, talking with him, they had engaged in that form of race play with several bulls. And, you know, she got caught in the moment and let that word out. She apologized later on, and they had a serious conversation about it. It didn't bother him in those moments. And so there's been couples that I've played with that I have done that kind of race play with. There were always couples that I knew what their intentions were, and we had, a very good relationship, and it was only used in like a sexual context. But, you know, there's also been like race play in which, you know, there's been verbal domination of the cuck, you know, as a white man submitting to superior black king or whatever. You know, so like that kind of stuff in that moment among consenting adults, I mean, there's been conversations, as, you know, it can be very hot in that moment, you know, it's very much
he
part
just
of role
said
play.
That penis moved. So I can understand.
It's very, very much, you know, a part of role play. But I haven't had the instance of a couple who's used that word or any other kind of slur or without asking me first, usually after a couple of play dates, how I feel about race play. Is that something I engage in? It's always been very respectful. I think that's the way you should approach it. The other one for me is there are women that are into verbal degradation and humiliation in sex play. Now, that's not who I like. I'm not going to call you out of your name or, you know, call you a slut, a whore, or whatever. There's some women that want to hear that during sex. And so I have to get into the mindset of, like, in those certain role play situations, this is hot for that person. Hmm. Once again, it happens. You have to have a serious conversation, you know, beforehand, and understand what everyone's boundaries are. But I will say one other thing about this: I think a lot of bulls have done a disservice to couples in that they're willing to play that way, but they're also publicly will disavow ever being in that kind of play.
That's interesting.
And so, you know, there's a lot more bulls out there. You know, it's like, for instance, I identify as a bi bull. I'm out and I'm open about that. It hasn't always been the case because I was afraid of losing, you know, couples and friends and stuff like that. And I just, you know, at the start of the pandemic, I just really stopped giving a damn about who cared about it and just wanted to be myself. And the exact opposite reaction has happened where, like, it's opened me up to more quality experiences and people. But The same goes for bi play and race play. There are a lot of bulls that will profess not to be into it publicly that will do it behind closed doors.
That's interesting.
And so I think that leads to some confusion with couples, you know, especially if they're new or they're, you know, having those conversations about boundaries and things like that. Was, oh, well, you know, we played with 6 out of the 10 bulls that we've played with have been into this. So they just assume this is the norm. That's not the way to go about it. But I mean, I can understand why people might do that.
Well, we can agree, Drew, that in this lifestyle, assumptions are foolish.
Yes.
Right. Everything should be about communication. It should be, we need to have open communication about the expectations before the event even begins. In my opinion, we have to have,
yes.
And you don't have to be open about everything you want to do immediately. You can get comfortable with somebody and open up, but before you whip out that N word, maybe have a conversation about it. Right.
For sure.
Before the husband grabs your dick, maybe we have a conversation about it.
Yeah. I just think that's like respectful, you know, even if I play with a couple and I let them know, hey, I'm open to bi play, you know, just have that conversation with me and ask me like, hey, what are you into? Like, where are you willing to go? You know, don't just like come up and start kissing me on the neck or something. If I'm like, you know, with your wife, you know, it's just like you're crossing a boundary there of like, you know, personal space and consent and all those kinds of things. And so if you're going to be, you know, and that goes for bulls and couples and whoever participates in this lifestyle, if you're going to participate in this lifestyle and have elevated, truly spectacular experiences in this lifestyle and get the best out of this lifestyle, communication is the secret sauce.
Oh, 100%. We are 100% on board with the communication idea. I do have another question for you, and I'm just kind of curious. Mm-hmm. You are out and open in your lifestyle persona. Are you out and open in your personal life?
No, there's only a couple of friends of mine, a couple of close friends of mine that know that I am bi pansexual, and they are friends that I know are they're true friends. They love me regardless. But so I come from a very conservative evangelical religious background. And so for my family, the idea of, you know, being bi, pansexual, anything besides, you know, wanting to marry one woman, have a house with a picket fence and 2.5 kids is anathema. And so, you know, I already have, you know, not to go into the whole history of it, but I already have a fraught relationship with my father in particular. And so, not to add to that, I'm not going to, you know, go into like, you know, what I do in my private personal life. But, you know, the lifestyle, some of my best friends and deepest friendships and relationships have come from people that I've met in the lifestyle. And so continue to do the lifestyle in an elevated way. I didn't want to lie about who I was to people in the lifestyle. Whereas people in my personal life, it's none of their business. But for folks in the lifestyle, I just feel like, you know, considering what we do, that's a part of myself that I shouldn't hide.
Isn't the idea of the lifestyle to kind of live as who you are?
Authentic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Authenticity is everything.
Just sort of living in that place where you're like, you know what? I've found the stuff that's my jam, and I'm into doing that. If you don't like it,
yeah,
that's okay. You know what?
It makes me happy. It doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes me happy. It doesn't hurt anybody. Go fuck yourself if you don't like it.
Yep.
That's.
I mean, I probably will anyways. But
that's the business of not wearing a cage, Poe.
It's kind of a problem, huh? What are you gonna
do? If it's there, oh. You know. Do you know why men masturbate so much, Poe? Because we can reach it.
That's right.
We can reach it. Like right. If God didn't want us to do it, He would have made our arms about 6 inches short.
We'll all be walking around with T-Rex arms.
So, Drew, let me ask you this, and I'm just curious. Were you always bi, or did you discover you were bi when you entered the lifestyle? Was it something about being a bull and that domination factor?
Yeah, so no, I mean, I discovered that really in my early teens. So I would say not too long after like my sexual awakening, I started to like notice, oh, okay, like that guy's pretty darn good looking. Or, you know, it was like, and it wasn't like, you know, oh, that's a good looking dude, you know, cool, you know, but it was like, you know, maybe I have a type here, you know, or something like that, you know, like what, the way I'm, you know, developing a type with girls. And so the first instinct, of course, was because of my upbringing, was to suppress that. And I never acted on it. The where the lifestyle came in on it was it really gave me the first real, it really allowed me to act on it. And that was when I met a couple who became one of my best couple of friends in the lifestyle. I played with them for 6, almost 7 years. And we met and, or we had met on, I think it was like Adult Friend Finder, and vibed very well. They approached me, you know, great, and had really great conversation. So I knew what I was getting into. And one of the things they asked me was, the husband was a cross-dresser, and so they were like, hey, is that okay if he does that while you're there? If not, that's cool too, but that's just kind of a part of our play. I'd never been around it, but I wasn't opposed to it, so I was just like, okay. So I meet them at the hotel, and he answers the door. He's fully dressed, and I was like, damn. You know, it was like, wow, you really know how to dress, right? So, and later, like when we were talking, end up spending like an overnight with them, and they were talking about bi play and like how their experiences, and like, I was like, okay, I think this might be something I might want to try. And so that was like really with them that I first like really owned that this was who I was, that these feelings that I had had before weren't aberrant feelings, and that like there was a safe space there for me to experiment and expand and see what this was. And so that's the lifestyle really helped me grow into it. But yeah, I knew before I entered the lifestyle that I was bi.
It's fascinating. Now, let me ask you this. You're on a level of, let's say, prolific, right? You're very active in the scene. You spend a lot of time in the lifestyle. Would you say that most of the couples that you interact with engage in that byplay, or is that something that you find is occasional?
One of the things that I find very interesting is, let me start here. So when I initially would put on my profile, I never put on my profiles, even after I was started engaging in byplay with couples, I never put on there that I was bi, because there was a lot of profiles that would have like no guy on guy, no bi play or whatever. And I was still, you know, a bit immature in my bull journey as seeing like a wife that I want to play with. And so I was willing to suppress even the knowledge of that so I could play with that hot wife. Mm-hmm. And so around the pandemic is when I really started to just not care. And I made the decision that I was going to put it out on all of my profiles that I was on. The funny thing that happened to me, so the majority of the couples that I play with, yes, they're open to bi play. But what happened to me when I started putting that on my profiles is I started getting contacts from people, from couples, saying, hey, that's interesting. We're into that, or we want to try that. The husband's interested in trying that, and we've been looking for a bi bull. A couple of times when I would talk to these couples or go through their profiles and just kind of read the profile to see if there was something else that, you know, vibed well, you know, so we could have like a good conversation, they would have on their profile no bi play, no guy on guy play. And so,
but they were looking for it anyway.
They were looking for it anyway. And so what they were looking for in many ways was that was what I found in that first couple that I had BiPlay, which was a safe space to experiment and expand and to be safe without judgment. In many ways, like, so in the lifestyle, you know, we play with race, we play with role play, we play with domination, we play with BDSM, we play with all kinds of things in this lifestyle.
Humiliation.
Humiliation, all of that. You know, and that I'm talking like not just the cuck lifestyle, I'm talking like the wider hot wife swinger community, kink community. The one thing that is the third rail is bi play. That is one of the areas where you will still get kink shamed or shamed in this lifestyle, is for admitting that you are willing to engage or that you do engage in bi play in so many corners of this lifestyle. I understand the apprehension that a lot of those couples might have. They're virtue signaling in a way to the community, because they're in a position of, okay, well, if I put this out there, I won't get to play with that bull. I won't get to play with that guy. And I just tell people to, you know, to be themselves and to be honest, because for me, in the 4 years since I came out to the lifestyle as bi, not only have my interactions, I wouldn't say that necessarily my interactions have gone up because of a variety of factors of life, work, and, you know, pandemic and all that kind of stuff, but my interactions of people approaching me have gone through the roof, and the quality of my interactions when I do have them have been the best that I've ever had in the lifestyle. Whether there is bi play or not, there's complete openness there. They know about me, I know about them, and they feel like whatever happens, happens. We're comfortable, we're not hiding anything of ourselves.
We're right back to that word, authenticity.
Yep.
Right? Being authentic, being who you are. And Tatiana and I, our approach has always been, we like BiPlay. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. If she likes you, it's irrelevant how I feel about it, but that's, in general, what we would prefer, mm-hmm. right? And we've never hidden that. We don't worry about it. But I do. I understand exactly what you're saying. There are a lot of people who do say not interested, even yep. though they are, and that's I think an yeah. important distinction.
Yeah, very much so. And I will say, for me, it can be very situational too. In many cases. You know, because there have been times when I played with couples.
Sometimes the guy's ugly.
But yeah, I mean, it's not even just that. It's like, they're not necessarily my type. You know what I mean? But what I really get off on is, you know, the submissive aspect of it and being able to dominate them. And like, there's something about having a guy. And a lot of times, especially in the cut dynamic, because I typically play with cut couples, that's what I typically prefer, my preferred dynamic. A lot of times I find that a lot of cucks tend to be executives or in charge in some sort of, like, their business world, you know, their career, their personal life. And to come into that dynamic and submit first to their wife and then to me, someone outside of their marriage, and then you add on top that, you know, I'm a black guy, you know, it totally flips what our society says should be happening. And in many ways, it's like this incredible release for them. So for me, I always tell, like, wives when I meet them, I'm not the most naturally dominant guy, but there are situations like, that for me is where, like, my natural, there's like a switch that flips. Like, I really, really enjoy those situations. And so, like, I can be dominant and then kind of transfer with the husband and then transfer that dominance to the wife. And, you know, I don't know if that makes sense, but that's really like how I play it.
Again, my penis moved. Yeah, I think it makes sense, 100%.
I got you.
Let me ask you this. again, given that you have a presence in the lifestyle, you are, you're a name, you did Queen of Spades magazine for a long time. You've played with some of the most prolific hot wives and cuckoldresses in the lifestyle. If an aspiring cuck couple wanted to approach you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
The best way, I think, is the way that I like to be approached is something very similar to how I approach couples. So if I'm on a, you know, FetLife or whatever, and I come across your profile, I'm going to read your profile. And I'm going to, you know, put in there something that I read about your interest or, you know, what you're looking for and why I believe I'm going to be a fit for what you're looking for.
Do you judge people on grammar and spelling?
No, I'm not a grammar Nazi, but so like there are some things that like, you know, there, I don't know, there's some spellings that I will go like, whoa, what's that? But I haven't, I haven't had that, so far. Like if you're missing some punctuation, I'm not going to dock you for that. When I message, like I'm going to message you and I'm going to give you an overview. Hey, this is Drew. I am such and such years old, some stats. I saw this in your profile, da 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 da, and I believe that I would be a perfect fit for that, or we have a common interest in that. I have experience. You know, just a little short little spiel to get on the radar and to let them know that I read the profile, I've taken a genuine interest, I'm willing to put forth some effort. That's like if you saw something on like my Twitter or whatever that interested you and it's like, hey, this is what we're looking for and you would be a good fit for what we're looking for, that's the perfect way to approach me. What happens is a lot of people lead with fantasy or they lead with not really knowing, you know, they're asking me what they should be looking for. And also I think that too is, you know, not every bull gets that. I think that's primarily because of my profile and the lifestyle. People are, you know, kind of figuring out, hey, what should I be into? And then they talk to me and they go, oh yeah, well, you're kind of what we're looking for. Where are you at? Yeah.
like, excuse me, sir, what's on the menu?
Yeah. Or the most common, and I think all bulls get this. I think nearly all bulls can relate to this is, what you get a picture of the wife. What would you do to my wife?
Ugh.
Kind of deal. Yeah. Which gets an instant
block. You're going to write out what you would do. And that's that guy's fantasy. That is
exactly. Yeah. And then like now you're stuck in this like maelstrom of messages back and forth. While this dude just like your ropes went out. The wife has no clue that you guys are talking. She has no clue that he's sending like, you know, naked selfies that were meant for just him to dudes all across the country and the world, you know. Yeah, that's just not. And then another one is, hey, we're going to be at such and such on such and such date at such and such time. You should come and seduce my wife. It's like, bro, this isn't like Literotica, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't like a fantasy story. Like, I would have much better luck showing up to your house as the pizza boy with the hole cut in the box.
I said, people like going, taking a.
You know, it's the same thing, you know. It's like, yeah, just I would tell people, like, you know, couples, cucks, and, you know, I get it. If you're, I assume that if a couple reaches out to me, I'm talking to the husband. I assume that because, number one, in the bad situations, it's a guy that's fantasizing. In the good situations, it's a guy who's vetting. And you know the distinct difference between a guy who's fishing and a guy who's vetting. And so I would just tell like the guys who are vetting, because we love talking to you, I would just tell them, hey, when you approach me, let me know what it was that made you think we would be a good match.
Just be honest.
Yeah, yeah. What was it about me that you thought would fit? And then give me a little bit about you guys, because I want to know, you know, I want to know about you. Like, what's your dynamic? You know, maybe how long you've been in the lifestyles. You know, just a general overview. I don't even need pictures at the beginning.
That makes sense. We haven't decided on anything yet. There's no reason to, like, yeah. Tatiana's kind of the same way. She gets immediately turned off when somebody who wants to play with her sends that penis pic. She's like, now you're out. Like, that's, if I wanted to see it, I would have fucking asked you.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I told that to the guy. So I don't typically do like coaching for bulls or anything like that, but I saw this one guy. He's trying to, he's online. He's been trying, you know, I could see some of his comments that he left on some friends and stuff, and just need like a little tune up on his approach, but I could see some earnestness there. And so he messages me one day and he goes, hey, I'd love some tips and can we talk? And I was like, sure. Yeah. Let's set something up. And so we're talking and he goes, so I see this about the dick pics. When do I send one? I was like, you don't.
Ever.
You don't send one unless they ask for it. And he goes, well, how often do they ask for it? I was like, if your conversation and communication is good, they don't usually ask to see it until you're there. You know, that's for me, like I literally in the last, I want to say in the last 5 years, I've sent one dick pic, and that was a couple of months ago to a hot wife that I'm talking to who's close to me, but she's in Canada. And when she comes down to the United States, we're going to meet up. And she literally sent me a pic one day. She was like, hey, conversation the other day got me all hot and bothered. I want to see a dick pic. And I go, yeah, you're the first person that's asked me that in a while. So, yeah, it's kind of hot. I got to go and find one, but I don't keep on like that.
Yeah, you have a phone and you have a penis. You can figure it out.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't at that time. I was at work. It would have been so. It would have been kind of weird if I whipped it out in the conference room at that point. That would have been another story.
But weird for who? Like, weird for who? Weird for them, not for you.
Hey Drew, so these guys will vouch for the fact that I am uncharacteristically quiet tonight, and there's a reason for that. I not only have been just enthralled with your conversation, the things that you've shared, and resonating so deeply with it, but I just can't believe that I've got this long list, a page worth of questions. And somehow in a very natural way, you have managed to navigate my entire list. And now I'm down at the bottom. But I did want to toss something out on behalf of our friend Aussie, who couldn't be with us, who said he would love to have you comment on your feelings, your thoughts, maybe even experiences with events like Splash Mocha.
Very good question. So I've never been to Splash, and I'm an outlier in that situation. So I just actually booked my first tickets to Splash. I'm going to be at Splash Houston in November. There may be a chance that I can get to one before that, but I know I will definitely be at Splash Houston and possibly New Year's Eve. So my experience as a bull has been almost entirely in one-on-ones. And I was actually talking with Mr. Mocha from the O-Phase podcast.
I listened.
Yeah. So one of the things that we were talking about, and I think it was off mic, was my experience has been different from most bulls in that I haven't really done the hotel takeover house party scene. Most of my success has been that one-on-one talking to couples from, like when I started, Craigslist was a thing. Craigslist Personals was a thing. So like I really cut
that
my
fucking teeth asshole in. From Boston fucked that all up.
Right. So that was really like where I cut my teeth. And so like you had to like distinguish yourself in emails, you know, if you want to get a response. And so most of my stuff has been on the one-on-one tip. as I grow and evolve into the next chapter of my bull journey, there are going to be more house parties, there are going to be more hotel takeovers and things like that. But I couldn't really speak to those just because that hasn't really generally been my experience. Talking to some bulls that I know who are very well versed in it, I think there will be a little bit of a learning curve for me because it's a different type of experience. You know, when you go to those parties, everyone there is there for a specific reason. They've come from across the country for a specific reason. And so I'm used to, you know, going to, you know, doing the sit downs at the bars and the coffee shop and, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, basically pitching myself about, you know, why I would be a good fit or, you know, developing something here. Whereas, you know, you go to the house, you go to the hotel takeover and it's like, hey, I'm interested. What room are you in? You know, right. Yeah. So it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for me, especially like a comfort level of, you know, walking up to, you know, some chicks that I'm interested in. I'm in some Telegram groups that are related to that. And there's been some women that I've seen in those groups and I'm just like, man, I'm worried about those little gremlins, you know, in my head of like, do I just do the cold walk up here on this? Is she going to be interested? Like, what happens if I get rejected here?
You know, I'm looking at your page and I'm telling you, probably interested. Probably.
I appreciate that.
She's probably interested.
A couple of my friends have told me that. And I'm just like, I'll have to see. Like, you know, there's still like that little, you know, in the back of my head, but
I have a sufficient. I'm really like I'm speaking to the universe here that I will be able to be at the same one you're at in Houston.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just lay out there that I'll be your wingman if you need one.
There you go. I appreciate that.
Now, you know that Tatiana and I were supposed to go to Houston last November.
Yes.
And we couldn't go because we had a family crisis, some stuff that we had to deal with. So I keep waiting for her because we put all the deposits down and everything, and they were like, you can put it towards another one and another time, and now we're kind of coming back into the lifestyle, and I keep waiting for her to say, this is the one I've chosen. So we'll see what happens.
We'll put that bug in her ear about Houston.
Really, she already likes you.
Awesome.
Well, I will say we'll go on record as saying we need to book Drew for a post Houston show and have him come back and share his experiences with us if he's comfortable doing that.
Oh, great!
I would love to.
That would be awesome. I would love to.
Now, there's one other thing I want to talk to you about before we wrap this up, because you are, in my opinion, one of the most fascinating people in the lifestyle. I've had a big interest in you since we met, going on 4 years ago now. I've heard you, and when I hear you're on a podcast, I immediately go and listen because I'm interested in your perspective. And I've heard you say many times, and you and I have actually talked about this between ourselves, that you feel like you have some cuck energy.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So, I tend to be, particularly in relationships, I tend to be more of the romantic, putting my partners on like a pedestal. Like I'll do the most I can for them. And so I recognize that in a lot of the cucks that I play with. And I tend to be very much a giver in relationships. So a few years ago, when I first got into the lifestyle, I've been in the lifestyle for about 16 plus years. When I first got into the lifestyle, the first 8 years were off and on because I was still vanilla dating. And so when I was vanilla dating someone, I wouldn't be in the lifestyle. I would back out. And then if I wasn't dating somebody, I would jump back in. And then over the last 8 years, I really haven't vanilla dated at all. And it's almost all been lifestyle stuff. But I met this girl that dated for really about a month and tried the long distance thing. We just kind of met at the wrong time. She left my area. She was very much into, you know, she owned being, you know, promiscuous. She loved polyamorous relationships. She really exposed me to a lot of things that I didn't know about talking to her. I really got off on the idea of like watching her with another guy, or like her going and play with another guy and like come back to me. Like there was something about that, particularly with her, that just drove me wild. And that was like really the first time I like ever played around with that. And then as I got older and got more into the lifestyle, that really appealed to me. Like when it really became clear to me that any long-term relationship that I would have from here on out would most likely either be some kind of poly dynamic with a hot wife or with someone who was willing to be in the lifestyle if they weren't already in it. The whole idea of being with a partner who had other partners and who's, you know, dating other men, but she had this real, tangible, safe space relationship, heart relationship with me.
Primary connection.
Primary connection really became something that I really began to think about. And so that's where I always say, like, if I get into a long-term relationship, if I ever do a long-term relationship again, I could totally see myself being a cuck. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Well, listen, it doesn't make you a bad guy.
No, no, not at all. Not at all. The best guys I know are cucks.
Amen. Me too.
I'm not just pandering to the audience here.
maybe we quote you on that.
Yeah. Quote me on that.
I just want you to know that this week, Dark Chocolate, who was supposed to be here with us tonight, and we're going to talk to him next week. We're going to try and get you back with him. We'd like to have a group discussion.
For sure.
But Doc has been challenged by Venus to cage for 3 days because his new girlfriend is cucking him from afar. He lives in Vegas. She lives in Indiana. He made this appointment with us tonight, and it's his girlfriend's birthday. He was like, I forgot it's my girlfriend's birthday. Now,
I saw something on.
There's no way he's listening, but he's supposed to go into a cage for 3 days and be cucked by her. And I'm certainly interested to hear how he feels about that.
I really wanted to reach out to him because I saw that on Twitter the other day that he put that on there. And I was like, wow, that's interesting because I've always been conflicted about the cage. I think I would want to do it, like with the right person, I'd want to do it. But I think I like the more so the experience of, you know, like watching or knowing my partners with someone else. Now, an FLR is very appealing to me because I'm very attracted to women that have goddess energy. Like they're, I believe that's like a real, real thing. There's a girl on Twitter that we have some mutual friends and I've been talking to her, but she texted me or messaged me one day. She goes, I noticed that you're liking a lot of my stuff. I was like, yeah, I mean, I kind of have like the notifications on, but I was like, you know, you have like major goddess energy. Like I just like this chick, I like literally like want to like kneel down and just like massage her feet or something, you know? And it's like that. If she was like, hey, I need you to be in a cage. Okay, I can do that. I can go in a cage for a few days. You know, it's like, maybe this is like the start of something here. Like, you know, you'll be talking to me in like a couple of years. Like,
you heard it here first.
Hubs and Poe are not cage guys, right?
I got you.
I was out of the cage for 15 months, and she put me back in it for 3 weeks. And it was a reminder of her power, of her strength. We had been out of it for a while. We were dealing with some stuff, and then we came back. I'll tell you this about the cage, Drew, if it's not something you've ever experienced. It is just her saying, this is mine. It's not yours. It's nobody else's. It belongs to me, and I will decide how you use it. No matter what, as much as I like to masturbate, and I like it a lot, right. To have her take control of that piece of me that I've been touching since I was about 8, and I can't touch it anymore. I can't even scratch it. It's an incredible turn on. And I hope you get to experience it in your lifetime. I think you'll appreciate it. That powerful woman thing, that's a great aphrodisiac.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Coming out of the cage. Fucking Mount St. Helens, man. Just
oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to have to try it. I have to ask Doc what his experiences are, too. And then try it for myself one day.
Doc's going to hate it.
I can imagine that he will.
Doc is prolific. He's having sex all over the place. Like, he's dropping threesomes, fivesomes, him and 17 women. He's out of control. I cannot wait to see what it looks like when he is wrapped up and he can't do shit.
That's going to be interesting. Yeah, that's going to be super interesting. That's what I always tease him about. I'll like make a list of like, okay, these are like top hot wives, top hot wife content creators. I would like to get with her. Damn, Doc's already been with all of these.
He's prolific.
He's out there, man. He's out there.
We absolutely love him. Doc, I can't wait to meet him in person. And you as well, my friend.
Yes, sir. Same to both of you. The Hubs.
This has been just a wonderful conversation. And we are such huge fans of yours, Drew. And we are very grateful that you would take time out of your busy schedule and sit down and talk to us. For me, for poor little white one, for the great Hubs to Hot Wife, and for Drew Marsden, thank you for tuning in to Cuck My Life. If you have any comments on today's episode or any other episode that we've done, or any questions about us or for us, we are happy to talk to you. Details are in the show notes from the whole panel here at Cuck My Life. Take care, and we'll see you next week.